Welcome to the NOLA Drink Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink, food, and culture in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Hey, welcome to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Happy August, everybody. Happy to have you here. Yep, we're fresh off a little bit of our summer break there. Didn't exactly know when we were taking the break. The schedule kind of worked out naturally that way. And if you're a regular listener of the show, you probably know that we took 3-4 weeks off from doing a new show. And that was a nice little respite for us here at the NOLA Drink Show. But we are back in action. Happy to be here. Got a really good show coming up for you here today. We are going to be chatting with Mac McDonald, who is the founder of the Association of African American Vintners. He's also the owner and winemaker of Vision Cellars in Sonoma County, California. And then also Phil Long, who is the current president of the Association of African American Vintners and the owner and winemaker at Longevity Wines out there in the Livermore Valley of California. And you may remember the last new show that we did. Phil joined us talking primarily about the Livermore Valley, but we talked about inclusivity in the wine industry and some things like that. He was joined by Chris Chandler, who is the executive director and my friend out there, executive director of the Livermore Valley Wine Growers Association, I should say. So Phil joins us again, and Mac joins us, and we're talking about the AAAV. Really good show. Excited to bring that one to you. Got another good show coming up for you next week. That one's already in the works. We will be chatting with Caroline Rosen, who is the president of the Tales of the Cocktail Foundation. And as you may know, if you've listened to the show for a while, we've past couple years, I believe, done an annual preview of Tales of the Cocktail. Usually we do that around June because Tales would normally take place here in New Orleans towards the end of July, latter half of July. And of course, with the COVID pandemic, that didn't happen, right? So they've retooled things. They're doing some really interesting things, and they've got it all sorted out. They're going to be doing stuff virtually coming up here in a few weeks. And so Caroline's going to give us a preview, kind of, you know, what they're doing, what to look for with this year's Tales of the Cocktail, the virtual event, and other things that the foundation and the event are up to. So looking forward to seeing her. We've got another show coming up for you fairly soon. We're going to be talking to a vodka brand along with someone from a nonprofit, and it's all connected to pet adoption and supporting animal rights. So we're really looking forward to that, and a whole host of other really cool stuff. We're working on some interesting things that we're going to be collaborating on with our good friends, the band Bon Bon Vivant, and you will know them because if you listen to the podcast version of the show, and I strongly encourage you to do that, they provide the theme music for our podcast-only segment, Another Shot with NOLA Drinks, but we're working on some collabs with them, doing some fun stuff, so be on the lookout for that. Sure. Yeah, and I'll mention that again. If you are listening here on the radio, I do encourage you to go get the podcast. You can always get the latest show a day or two after it airs on radio. You get the full podcast version, which includes our exclusive podcast-only segment that I just mentioned, Another Shot with NOLA Drinks. We get a little deeper into the weeds with certain things, sometimes a little more technical. Sometimes we just shift gears entirely. But our featured guests with whom we do the featured interview are typically the folks that stick around, and we just continue to chat with them on the podcast. You can go to noladrinks.com and get it there. Certainly you can connect with us on social media. We are at NOLA Drinks on Facebook, at NOLA Drinks on Instagram, and at NOLA Drinks 1 on Twitter. Yep, somebody's cyber squatting there on NOLA Drinks on Twitter, I guess. So we are NOLA Drinks 1. So there you go. Friends, we are going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. I'll tell you a little bit more about what's going on with the show, too, when we close things out. If you're listening to the podcast, of course, after our podcast-only segment, so be sure to check that out. You'll hear more about what's happening with us here at the NOLA Drink Show. I hope you all are doing well out there. Hope you all are doing what you're supposed to do and taking care of each other. But right now, we're going to take a little break here on the program, and we're going to be back chatting with Mac and Phil from the Association of African American Vintners. Come on back.
Well, my bucket's got a hole in it. My bucket's got a hole in it. My bucket's got a hole in it. I can't buy no beer. Well, I'm standing on a corner with the bucket in my hand. I'm just looking for a woman that ain't got no man. My bucket's got a hole in it. Yeah, my bucket's got a hole in it. My bucket's got a hole in it. I can't find no beer. Yes, I went up on a mountain.
right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show, friends, this week. Happy to have you here, as always. As you know, we are talking to two gentlemen with the Association of African American Vintners, Mac McDonald, who is the founder of said organization, and Phil Long, who is its current president. Gentlemen, welcome, and thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Thanks for having us, Brian.
Absolutely. My pleasure. And Phil, it's good to have you back on the show. You were actually on the last news show, Phil, that we did before we took our summer break. So you're now a second time victim of the NOAA Drink Show. I appreciate you coming back this time.
I don't know if victim's a word, but I'm here and I'm happy to be here.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it. And Phil, just so, you know, so for the record, you're the owner and winemaker at Longevity Wines there in Livermore, California, one of my favorite spots. And how's it going out there in Livermore?
You know, we're still struggling. We're still struggling to find our new reality. You know, the tasting room's been closed. We're doing curbside. There are some wineries that are starting to open. I just want to make sure we're taking every precaution to protect both the safety of our customers and the employees before we even attempt to do such.
Got it. So people are able to order and pick up curbside. Is that kind of the idea? Yeah.
Curbside or online, either one.
Okay, gotcha. And Mac, you're up there in Windsor. I guess I'm down here in New Orleans, so from my perspective, just about everything is up there. But you're up there and over there in Windsor, California. For folks who don't know, it's north of San Francisco in the Sonoma area. How's life up there in Sonoma, Mac?
Not the same as Phil. You know, it's just a new way of looking at things and trying to do business. So it's kind of a thing that I haven't figured out, and I don't know. Yeah, if anybody else has figured it out, because I think we're all going to be going through this for quite a while.
In Sonoma County, Mac, are you guys still kind of the same thing like Alameda, for where Phil is at? Are tasting rooms open, or is it just curbside pickup type stuff?
Oh, some of them are open if they have the right space. And this thing changed from week to week, you know, it looked like to me, you know. So you got an outside area where folks can sit outside and do the social distance. You know, they can go in and maybe sit down or something. And I didn't keep up on it this week, but one time it was about you had to have a food service. But I think that went away now. So I think some of them are open for tasting.
Gotcha. And I should note that you're the owner of Vision Cellars, and I didn't want to give that short shrift, of course. And I wasn't going to actually talk about this, you guys, but it's got to be really different when you're dealing with selling. I mean, so much of the tasting room model is based on people coming in and tasting what it is that you make, and that's kind of how you sell them on it, right? And then now that that's off, are there ways that you guys are trying to come up with to get a taste of wine in people's mouths, or is it just kind of, you know, you're just putting messaging out there and people are trusting what you're making?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think, you know, there's a following both of us have, and we have a pretty loyal following. But, you know, I think the success in navigating through this new environment is finding out different ways of, like you said, getting wine in front of people. So we're starting a virtual wine tasting program strictly through the winery, and also there's another large, I hesitate to say the name, a group company that would sell tasting passes to multiple wineries. And obviously that kind of business is about like restaurants right now. but they're pivoting and they're offering corporate virtual tastings. And we are now one of their featured wineries. So yeah, right now we're just going to have to keep pivoting and navigating, because like Mac says, it's not only changing daily, it's changing hourly, you know, and not only by state, but by county. Like Mac says, he doesn't think he has to have food, but I don't think it applies to Alameda County. I think Alameda County, where we are, we do have to have food. So it's a changing landscape, and we're just trying to navigate it the best we can.
Sure. Got it. Well, thanks, you guys. Mac, I want to ask you, so you started the Association of African American Vintners in 2002, is that correct?
And That's correct.
Can you give us a little background on that?
Yeah, well, it was back in 2002. It was myself and two other gentlemen. One of the gentlemen was named Dr. Ernie Bates. He owned Cowdy Chateau, and the other gentleman was named Vance Sharp. And he owned a winery called Sharp Cellars. So we just got together. I met them at several wine tasting, and I thought, oh, these guys are here all the time. You know, maybe I need to meet with him. And so I invite him over to my house a week later, and we got to talking about, you know, the wine industry and how we could better fit in and how we could help grow the wine industry. And that was really the starting of Vision South, I mean, of the Association of African American Vendors. But it was based on knowledge. You know, we felt that people needed knowledge, and this was one way to get folks knowledge that we had and help them get into this business and grow their companies.
Mm-hmm. What, Mac, let me ask you, what got you into the wine business?
My father was a moonshine maker, and I grew up 89 miles south of Dallas, Texas. Okay. And all of my relatives, you know, some people say, well, you know, blacks are new to this, you know, wine industry. I don't agree with that. Every one of my old good old Baptist aunts and uncle made wine. It may not have been stuff that I would drink today, but they made wine out of fruits and berries. So I was always around some style of wine, and definitely I was always around moonshine. So at 12 years old, I had a bottle of wine, and I don't know who produced it. All I knew, it was a bottle of Burgundy. And I didn't know at that time a Burgundy from a Chardonnay, from a Zin, or nothing. So I liked that wine, and I thought, you know what? I think I want to be a winemaker. So that was the start of me wanting to be a winemaker. I went through a lot of stuff to get there. In fact, I didn't get there until I was like 55 years old. But that's okay. I got there.
You got there. When did you open Vision Cellars, Matt?
We started Vision Cellars in 1995. That was the starting of Vision Cellars. And we made some wine, but we didn't like what we were going to, you know, bottle. And my deal was that when I released my fresh wine, I wanted to make a statement that I'm here and I have a good product. And so I was encouraged to bottle it and release it, but I didn't. Same, you know, and I didn't do it in 96, but in 97, I had a wine that I thought it matched something that was good. My problem was that I was trying to make a wine as good as a guy named Bert William, who was one of the founders of William Cellium. I was trying to make a wine that good. I never accomplished that, but that's what I was trying to do. So in 97, I thought this wine was pretty good, and I got a master sommelier by the name of Larry Stone to taste it, and Larry liked it. And so that's how I got started in the wine business. A lot of stuff went on in between, you know, how I got there. You know, it wasn't an overnight thing, you know, and I didn't have any money either.
Right, okay, gotcha. Well, Phil, when Mac talks about starting the association and the idea of increasing knowledge, can you elaborate on that a little bit? What does that mean? What is the mission of the association?
You know, I think today, you know, our vision is knowledge and getting eyes on the fact that African Americans actually do exist in the industry. We're such a small percentage, like 0.1% of African-American-owned wineries and winemakers in this country, that first of all, the awareness that we exist is, you know, how do you even know that needle's in the haystack if you don't know if they're to look for it? So I mean, that's one of the first real goals of AAAV is to create awareness that there are African-American winemakers that do exist, that we do make wine, we do make great wine. And we're not saying you should buy our wine or taste our wine because we're black. We're saying you should taste our wine because it's wine. You know, when wine's on a shelf in a store, you know, unless you've got some story or behind it, it's about the label. It's about the brand. It's about the support of that brand. It has nothing to do with who made it. It's still wine.
Right. And you said something, Phil. I was reading an interview with you recently, and I think we talked about this last time, kind of between one of the breaks, that I think it's sort of what you just said, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but this is not about getting a leg up in some way. This is about just having access, correct?
Correct. This is just about, it goes back to awareness that we actually do make wine. And, you know, a lot of people, it's interesting coming up through, and, you know, with Mac's help and other people's help, it's, you know, I'd look at articles and things of people and I'm like, well, I'm a lot farther than that. And people would say, they don't know you. They don't know about you. You're not. So that's really kind of the vision, is spread awareness that we exist and come together. We're much stronger together than we are apart. So I think that's part of the goal.
Gotcha. Can you guys identify for me some of the especially for people who don't know, if we're talking to white people here and stuff like that, what are some of the barriers that African Americans face in entering or advancing in the wine industry?
I think one would be, right off the top of my head, would be finances. It takes quite a bit of money nowadays to get into this wine business. And so that may be pretty close to the number one or number two issue. You can't get into this business trying to make 150 cases of wine, because somebody have to build your brand. And who's going to build your brand when you only have 150 cases? So you have to have some deep pockets to get into this business. Now, when I got into it, the pocket didn't need to be that deep. And I'll tell you, I have a partner, Miss Lil, who is my wife and partner and my boss, all in one. She done all the necessary paperwork to do this. Well, that's a little bit harder to do nowadays. So I would still stick with, finances is a number one or number two thing.
Okay, access to capital and that sort of consideration. Sure. Yeah. What would you add to that, Phil?
I would definitely add to the fact that capital is always going to be an issue. I learned early on, somebody asked me, did I know how to make a small fortune in the wine business? And I said, yeah, you start with a big one. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much been the case. Mm-hmm. But in my particular case, when I was in college, I didn't know it was a career path. I had no idea. Ag, when I was in school, even though they had ag at Cal Poly Pomona, those were the guys in cowboy boots and cowboy hats. That's all I knew. I had no idea that this was an industry. This was a career path. This was something I thought probably at the time, well, that's all made in France. I didn't know. I mean, I think awareness that the industry even exists as a career path for African Americans and their upbringing, I think that's an opportunity for us to help educate young minorities in general that, yeah, this is a career path you can choose just as well as being a doctor, lawyer, or whatever.
That's a great point. And do you think that there, in just reading stuff and talking to a lot of my friends who are persons of color in the broader liquor industry, sort of what I'm talking about, not just wine or in the service and hospitality industry, that a lot of people are turned off by the industry because of these barriers that you're talking about, the awareness not being out there that it's a career path that you can take because you're not even aware of the avenue or the intake. And then when you start to encounter things when you're at a professional trade event, for example, and how you're treated or you're ignored, given sort of the minimal attention, there's a lot of off-putting, I think, maybe that can happen for people that are trying to build a career in the industry. Is that a fair way to put it?
There's definitely those obstacles, but I think Mac and I both agree. No matter what or who or your color or race or background is, whatever you put in the bottle, it better be good. And for the most part, if you put a good product in a bottle, it's going to be recognized no matter who you are. So, I mean, it has to start with, we're not asking, again, going back to your leg up comment, we're not asking for a leg up. Just put a side by side. Mm-hmm. And let's see where we go from there. We have to put out good product, period, to even begin to compete or be recognized in this industry.
Great. You guys, let's do this. Let's take a little break here on the show, and then we're going to come back and chat more, with Phil and Mac from the Association of African American Vintners. Guys, we're going to take a little break here on the Noel Drink Show. Come on now. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening in. We are chatting with Mac McDonald and Phil Long of the Association of African American Vintners, and good to see you guys and have you on the show. We were talking a little bit before we took a break, and Phil, you mentioned the idea that the most important thing is sort of, what's in the bottle and having the quality of the product be, speak for itself. And But I think, right, there's still some barriers that we're talking about here. You said people being aware that you're out there. So, like, is it a difficult situation sometimes maybe to have distributors know? And any small winery struggles with this, right? But are there added barriers that need to be considered in this situation, or is it just that? Getting distributorships, for example.
Yeah, Mac, you don't talk about case counts, and you want me to take it?
You take it.
Okay. So, when you start with the smaller number of African-American wineries in the industry, and you talk about most of them being of, let's just say, newer heritage. In other words, you know, I didn't have a grandfather who made wine in France and then came here and continued. I was the first. So for all intents and purposes, African-Americans in this industry, from the big picture, we're relatively new. And there's very few of us that can engage with the distributor because of their need is so great. That is the biggest problem, is that most of our wineries that are African-American in this country are probably 2,500 cases or less. And to distribute, you need to be 10,000 cases or over. So, yeah, there's a hole. There's a disparity there. And I'm not just saying that, you know, any color winemaker who makes 2,500 cases is going to struggle in that sense. But that is part of our struggle.
Mm-hmm. But I think, and that's a really important thing when we talk about case counts. I think people, we've talked about this on the show in times past, that there are certain sort of scales of economy that need to happen for a winery of what it means. Like you can, if you're very popular, cult wine, I hate using that term, but you know, you might be able to make it on 800 cases a year if you're selling the stuff for $250 a bottle. But you're talking about like distributorships and things, and we have these sort of break points where being able to distribute in a broader area than your local area, statewide, then moving nationally, and what that means on an economy of scale. So that makes a lot of sense. Well, you're talking about it. If you're small, you're small. And that's where most of the African-American wineries are they're small.
Correct. Correct. I mean, it's one, you're right. It's one thing if you make a 100-point wine, and we all know the cult wineries that are out there. We don't have to go through them. But if you're going to make a 100-point wine and people around the world are clamoring to get a bottle for it, yeah, you can sell it for $450 bucks a bottle. But, you know, 100-point wines are rare. And, you know, we're all striving to make better wine. I'm not there yet, but I'm not going to stop trying.
The last bottle I had from you, Phil, was really good.
Well, thanks.
That was really good. It's a great red blend that we I drank it already, so I mean obviously. So
well, thanks. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to get my hands on some Vision Cellars there, Matt, because I've not tasted your wine before.
Sure, I'll see that you get some. But, you know, Dad, I'll piggyback on what Phil was talking about. That you know, that's where I feel that the Association of African American Vendors come in real handy. And we just been, since Phil has been the president, we really got it kicked up to a whole nother notch. And that's to let folks know how you determine what a bottle of wine costs. You know, you just can't say, I'm going to make this wine and somebody's going to buy it. But, you know, how much does it really, really cost? And not just what you pay for the wine, but when you go to that distributor, you know, how much money you have to spend doing that. It's a lot of factors come in. And we have members on our, you know, on our board that has that stuff all calculated out because they've been the CFOs of major wine companies. So I think that's going to be very helpful to help African-Americans get more involved with this wine business and be successful at it.
Right.
Sometime back when I started this company in 1995, I have an African mass on my label, and you know when I started this. So when you have an African mass on your label, you better have some pretty good juice in that bowl to get somebody to even try it or think about trying it.
Right. Well, and actually, Mac, since you bring this up, because one of the things that you know I've had conversations with folks, and just even you know just doing general reading about the industry and such. I think there's a lot of misperception, for example, when you are a quote-unquote black-owned winery, that people, especially white people, might think that you're making it for a black audience. And I like the quote I read from a black winemaker, that said, I'm pretty sure when any white person starts a winery and they're a winemaker, they're not just making their wine for white people. Now, I am in Louisiana, So maybe, but sorry, that's a bad joke. But yeah, you know, is that true? I mean, I think it's a misconception that's out there.
We make vision sellers for people who got money, and we don't care whether you black, white, green, or what.
Yeah.
But we want to have a good quality. You know, we want to be able to have a product that's competitive with anything in the market. And that's what I said earlier. I made this wine in, you know, a couple of years, but I never released it because I didn't think it was the quality that I wanted to see out there. And so I don't feel that, you know, we make wine for African American. We make wine for the general public. Mm-hmm. The organization to help African Americans understand the wine business as well as help non-African American to understand that we know a little bit of something about wine. So that's what that's all about.
Got it. So, I mean, do you find that that's a true statement, though, that there's a misconception from some people out there that, I mean, do you experience that, Phil, at all?
That's a total misconception. The bottom line is when we make wine, everybody has to buy our wine. If we just made wine for one segment of the public, you can't really expect to be successful. You have to sell your wine to everybody. And it goes back to what's the juice in the bottle? Is the juice in the bottle good enough? But yeah, there is this misconception that exists. Oh, are you making it for African Americans? In other words, is it sweet wine? Well, you know, there's a palate for sweet wine, no matter if you're black or white or whatever. People just like sweet. But we're making fine wine. We're making wine for the masses, not for a particular segment. And the only way you're going to be successful in this business is if everybody drinks your wine.
Right. Thank you. And to your point, Phil, about sweet wine, having been the general manager for a little while here, having been the general manager here of the winery in the New Orleans area called Pontchartrain Vineyards, people will tell you that they don't like sweet wine. And there's a lot of, I mean, and I don't mean like really sweet wine, but they'll say, I come up to the table and say, I don't like sweet wine. And we made a cloyingly sweet red that everybody liked. Well, I shouldn't say everybody, but a lot of people like. That's another huge misconception out there. A lot of people like sweet.
Well, that's the thing is also is what makes a wine sweet. And, you know, as a winemaker, we talk in terms of residual sugar, but everybody's idea of what is sweet is different. And, you know, there's that threshold of mouthfeel to sweetness that, you know, as a winemaker, we can play around with jogging between the two. And you're right. It may be just off dry and we consider it a sweeter wine, but the general public may not.
Yeah. There's a difference between residual sugar sweetness and what I call perceived sweetness.
Exactly.
Right, fruit structure and things like that in a wine. Well, let's do this, you guys. Let's take a little bit of a break, and we're going to come back and chat more with Mac and Phil from the Association of African American Vintners Friends. Come on back. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show. I appreciate it as always. I think we got our little feedback loop there worked out from the last segment. And Phil, so let's talk a little bit about what are some of the specific programs that the Association of African American Vintners is up to these days? And we were talking about this just now before we went on the air. All bets are off, but what do you guys do in normal times? And then what are some of the things that you're doing to pivot and adapt to what's happening today?
You know, in normal times, we would have events or at least one event a year to raise funds and raise funds through membership fees to at least grant a scholarship or two. But what's happened, obviously, during these times, Black Lives Movement, a surge of, a surge of support is coming in from across the board, not only to the association, but to my winery in particular. But as far as the association, Artesa Winery in Napa dedicated a portion of their proceeds from an entire weekend just to AAAV. We're getting people reaching out to us to assist us with our scholarship programs. We're working with the Wine Academy and the Napa Valley Wine Academy on scholarships through WSETs 1 through 4. I've been in talks with the Masters of Wine program, and we're currently working with Wine Enthusiast Magazine to put together three events a year, two virtual, one live, hopefully, fingers crossed, that we're going to do together. It's going to be basically a webinar. It's going to be a free webinar, and they're actually going to help with membership of new members through that time. So we've got a lot of things going on. We are fully funded in a scholarship in conjunction with United Negro College Fund. I think the biggest difference right there is, are the schools going to be open?
Right.
That's something to consider. But yeah, we've got a lot of
sorry to interrupt. So is that like a scholarship for students to go to a viticultural or viticultural program at a university or?
Correct. That particular scholarship is the Black Winemaker Scholarship Fund. It is targeted specifically for viticulture and enology. And, you know, Napa Valley Wine Academy is targeted strictly for wine professionals. We're in talks with Sonoma University on wine business. I had a conversation with Florida A&M on agriculture. So, yeah, we're trying to cover the gamut of all categories of African Americans in the wine business in general, not just winemaking.
Great. That was actually something I wanted to, and you guys are sticking around for our podcast only segment, Another Shot with Nola Drinks, and we're going to talk a little bit more about your respective wineries and wine programs. But since we're here, I also want to ask you, because up until this point, we had talked a lot about kind of more of the winemaking side and winery side, but you guys are focused on the industry from top to bottom, correct?
Correct. I mean, we're all focusing on diversity, and even the scholarships with the Napa Valley Academy, you know, we're not even requiring that they're African-American. It's not, our goal isn't to just promote African-Americans in the industry. Our goal is to promote diversity. And if you're not African-American, no matter who applies for the scholarship, the question is still going to be asked, how are you going to change the diversity profile in this industry as you move forward?
Mm. That's fantastic.
So that's our goal, is really creating a diverse playing field and trying to change that number.
When you guys are looking at other parts of the industry, so, you know, beyond the sort of the winemaking and winery side, obviously there's the sommelier part of this, which you've just touched on, Phil, service side, there's distributions, all the sales channel stuff, marketing, you know, it's a huge industry. Are we seeing, and you mentioned this before when you were on about a month ago with me, are we seeing and I think it's an obvious question, but are we seeing underrepresentation throughout the entire industry at every level?
We are seeing underrepresentation at every level, and that's why I've identified specific areas we're going to try to target and offer something in those areas. We're now offering even job opportunities on the AAAV website where they can go and see, and I have a constant feed of new opportunities to the website. We're offering what the scholarship opportunities are. So we're trying to infill all of those areas to offer young African-Americans and minority students a way to get in. I will say something I forgot to say earlier. We do have a member that is actually a distributor that is now starting to distribute some of our members' wines, which is fantastic. And something I am working on, which is the most recent, I'm working on a way that we are going to begin selling our members' wines on the AAAV website.
Oh, fantastic.
So it's a one-stop shop. You don't have to go find all these 20, 30 producers. You can actually go to the AAAV website and buy two of his, one of mine, you know, 10 cases of Max. Or whatever you're looking for. So anyway, yeah, we're really trying to reach on all segments. We're not trying to just focus on the winemaking.
Phil, when you say sort of infill, like, could you maybe identify I'm looking for a term here. What would be a couple good insertion points? Like, where would you look to seek and leverage the greatest amount of influence in making some change in diversity across the industry? Like, are we talking about sommeliers? Are we talking about winemaking? Are we talking, you know, where would some of those places be that you all are looking at?
I mean, you know, people come to my tasting room where they used to anyway, all the time. And, you know, well, I want to get in the wine business. I guess I should learn how to make wine first. I'm like, yeah, no. Anybody can make wine. I said, if you want to be in the wine business, you got to learn to sell wine. That if that's the number one thing you need to know how to do in this business is sell wine. So, I mean, I'd like to see more African Americans or more diversity, especially among the distribution side, especially among the broker side. You know, when you're in that hole between 10,000 cases, 2,500, then that's where a broker comes in. You know, there's not a lot of African-American brokers that I know. So there's the sales side is a very, very important side to be a part of. But there's holes everywhere. I mean, distribution, sales, wine business, SOMS, there's holes everywhere.
Right. And need to create then pathways for career advancement, right? I think is such an important part of this.
Awareness that, A, the path exists, and then, you know, helping them find the toll, let's say, to get on that path.
I think that that's, and just in speaking to friends that are in the industry, I think that's been one of their greatest frustrations is the awareness of where the path exists, or the idea also that the sort of constant challenging of knowledge and credential. Where like if you're at a trade tasting, right, and you're a person of color at the trade tasting, and people are like, who do you know to get in here? Or, right. You know, are you a SOM? It's like, you're at a trade tasting. Why don't you just assume that I'm in the trade? And do we need to have this conversation any further than that?
Right, and you didn't ask anybody else that.
Exactly.
So it was one thing if you asked everybody that question. But no, you're right. Those are some of the challenges that we face, obviously.
Mm-hmm. You know, from one perspective, though, I've been doing these trade things for a long time, and a lot of folks ask that question because they don't see anyone look like me at that tasting. So it raises a question. You know, I give you a good example of this. I was at a tasting, major tasting, and I went to get my wife some water, and I was walking back to my table, and the guy said, "Where you get that water from?" I says, "I got it up at the front of the building." He goes, "When you get a chance, would you bring me some of that water?" So he had just saw that in all the tastes that he'd done, that that's what you saw. You saw the water boy, so to speak, that looked like me. Mm-hmm. And so he came over to my table, and I'm behind the table, and he says to me, he goes, This wine tastes really damn good. He said, he tastes really good. He goes, well, who's the maker of this wine? And I just looked at him and I says, I am. And then we talked a little bit more and he goes, well, who owns it? I says, I do, you know? So it wasn't a bad question. He just wasn't, you know, really used to seeing people at a wine tasting like that. And he had read the reviews, but he never looked at the website to see what I look like.
Right. And that's a common refrain, right? And that's a common microaggression we see in when people interact is, yeah, right. Well, you guys, we got about 45 seconds left before we close the radio portion of the show. Mac, will you tell people what's the website for Vision Sellers?
VisionSellers.com.
Okay, great. And Phil, longevity?
Longevity is longevitywines.com and AAAV is aaavintners.org.
Great. And that's all going to be in our show notes, friends. Phil and Mac are going to stick around for another shot with Noah Drinks. We're going to talk more about their wine programs and some other stuff here. But if you are listening on the radio, go to noahdrinks.com to get the podcast. And do remember to be kind to one another. Use your turn signal. And now more than ever, take care of yourselves. Cheers, y'all.
Child, what are you doing in a place like this? I said. said, all these saints and all these sinners will try to bend your ear. It don't matter who you're serving, we're all the same down here.
Yep, another shot with Noah Drinks. Friends, thanks for sticking around. Happy to be back with new shows after our summer break, much needed and rewarding time off. Hope you are enjoying and are being stimulated by our conversation with Mac and Phil. We're going to continue our conversation with them, and we're pretty much just going to talk about wine now here in the next little bit. So we're going to do that, and then I'll be back with my parting shot. Here we go. All right, everybody, up another shot with Noah Drinks. Thanks, friends, for sticking around. We're chatting with Phil Long and Mac McDonald of the Association of African American Vintners and also winery owners and winemakers in their own right. We're going to talk wine here in just a minute because we've been talking about other things, as you know. But, Phil, we were talking about something during the break and just a point that we wanted to make. Mac, you were telling the story about somebody interpreting you as a member of the service staff at a trade tasting, which I think is something that we've, you know, heard about or can imagine happening. Phil, in your case, you're telling a really funny story about Pinot Grigio. Can you share that one with us?
Yeah. So we were having an event at the winery, and, you know, it was an event, lots of people, and we were pouring. One of the wines we were pouring is my Pinot Grigio, which we make in an Italian Ramato style. So
is that like orange wine? Is that how we?
Orange wine is kind of it's kind of a kish term. I don't like to use.
Just so people know, yeah, Ramato style.
Call it our pink Pinot Grigio. Actually, it's one of Mac's favorite wines. Anyway, we're serving that in an event, and I was mingling among the crowd, and I think she was an African American woman came up to me and said, "What is this? This is really good." I said, "Well, that's Pinot Grigio." She says, "No, it's not." I said, "Yeah, it's Pinot Grigio." She says, no, you don't know what Pinot Grigio is. This is not Pinot Grigio, but thank you." And she walked away. I'm like, okay. Later on, she came back with her head in her hands, like, "I'm so sorry," not realizing I was the owner and winemaker at the time. But yeah, and then, like you said, you don't want to make them feel horrible. You're like, you got to be the host, and you got to make your customers feel good no matter what the situation is.
And what they assume. And then, so I think sort of the point here is we're talking about somebody will come in, put their foot in their mouth, perpetuating some sort of microaggression or aggression, then realize, then become embarrassed. And then all of a sudden, because you're the hospitality providing person, then it's your job to kind of pick them up, dust them off, and still make them feel welcome. And
correct. I think a lot of people, I will say, she's still a customer today.
Okay.
And that's, I mean, look, that's the end. That's what you want. Right?
That's what you want. But I mean, it's an added layer of what we're talking about here where, you know, and I mean, you mentioned that the woman, you thought, you know, she was African American, but you know, this happens, I think, all the time when you're talking about somebody going into a restaurant and you're, a black service staff member comes over and, you know, wants to take your wine order and they say, "No, I want to see the psalm." And the person will go, "Well, I am the psalm."
Right. Right.
And then they realize, and then there's this whole thing that you're still providing service and we shouldn't have to have that layer of the conversation.
No. And just another little quick quirk. When Deborah was still here and my assistant winemaker at the time was a white assistant winemaker. His name was Chris Vase. And whenever the three of us were working the winery, whether there was four other people or not, the assumption always was that Chris was her wife or Chris was, yeah, her husband.
Her husband. Okay.
Yes. That I was just a guy that worked there.
So, and we should clarify, right? Because Deborah is your wife who unfortunately passed about a year ago, right, Phil?
Yeah. Just January 2019.
And she was white. So I just wanted people know what we're talking about here. So yes, they assume that you were the guy working there and they were the winemaking couple.
Right. They're the winemaking couple. And
no, yeah, and Brian, no.
Brian, he's talking about that wine. I just want to go on record to say, last year in the last release, they cut me off. No. So they wouldn't sell. They wouldn't sell me. They told me they didn't have any more. So I went to the winery, snooting around to try to find some, and I wasn't able to find them. So this year, I put in, you know, my 5-case order with that swine. I have not heard back yet. I don't know if I'm still cut off. No,
Phil, you're not giving Mac his allotment. I mean, what's going on?
I just wanted to get that shot in nationally. So everybody knows.
Right. Obviously, we know what's on the list.
See, that's rough because I see that cutting another way too, where it's like I'm trying to, you know, like you're my friend, so if I'm running out, I'm cutting you off.
No, we keep making more and more, and we're scheduled to make even more this year. Harvest is scaring me a bit, but that's not what this is all about. But we'll get you your wine, Mac. Don't worry about it.
Well, like you said, Mac, that's now on the record. So.
Yeah, it's on the record. Yeah.
Well, Phil, let's talk a little bit, just since you mentioned this, how's Harvest? You said you're a little nervous about Harvest this year.
Yeah, I'm a little nervous about Harvest because, you know, every other year I've done Harvest my entire life. Does everybody call while I'm doing these? Every other Harvest I've done my entire life, you had the ability to plan literally globally what's going on. This is the first year we don't have that opportunity to plan. Is there going to be a vaccine? Are we going to be able to open? Are we not? You know, what is it? You know, I was talking to Stephen Mirisu, and he's like, if you do harvest what you did, who knows if you're going to even have money to bottle it when it comes time to bottle. We don't know. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually, you know, struggling with clearing space. I think we're going to start this week, you know, clearing space, pulling out our crush equipment. And I'm looking at the red vines, and some of them are halfway through verage, and I'm just like starting to panic. Like, we got to get it together.
Do you guys grow stuff yourself, Phil, and source, or one or the other?
So
I was growing up until about maybe 3 years ago, but it just got to be so much work for me. And if you have a small vineyard, you know, vineyard managers don't want to screw around with you. So I sold the vineyard. So I'm back to purchasing fruit now.
Okay. And working with farmers that you know have a relationship with, right? That kind of typical.
Yeah.
And what about you, Phil?
Work with the Garys and, you know, Gary Pizzoni, Gary Franzoni, down in Monterey County, with the Garys and Rosella's Vineyard. And then I work with a vineyard up in Mendocino here in Sonoma County, you know, so a few in Napa Valley. So it's just pretty good fruit out there for me.
I'm always a firm believer in, you know, farmers, let farmers farm, right? And you know, you got to go get fruit from where it grows well and performs well. And you know, someone knows what they're doing with it. Because I think people get hung up on the term estate too often. I can tell you, if we were producing here in Louisiana at the local winery when I was with them, if we were producing estate Chardonnay, estate doesn't mean crap.
Maybe not in Louisiana. Yeah,
no. I can
understand that. You know, for us, we've been working with some vineyards since we started, and we started out taking these small amounts. Now we're up to the point where we take 90 to 100% of the fruit in those vineyards. So we're basically managing the vineyards along with the vineyard manager to get exactly what we want out of the vineyards. And so we get the fruit exactly the way we want it. I know I like to be involved in the growing. I like to be involved in, you know, what's going on and tons per acre and dropping fruit and increasing quality. And I have heard from other people in the industry, keep the winemaker out of the fields. Those are the people that want more quantity and quality.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, it's a lot of fun, the whole big picture.
And I think a lot of people, and thank you for saying that, you guys, because it sounds like you both approach it the same way. I think a lot, you know, I was just mentioning that thing about estate and people overplaying that term. You know, when you're working with a good farmer as a good winemaker, as far as I've seen it and some direct experience with it, you want to be out there. And I mean, because a good farmer is going to want to grow it as best they can. It's obviously an agricultural product, but they're going to want to grow it to your spec. Right? I mean, and it's when you pick and what the kind of the ripeness is and what the acid levels are and all that stuff that we're looking at that are important. Everybody's wine program is different. So you got to work with your growers. I mean, that's a good thing. mean, I think you're 100% right. Keeping the winemaker out of the field is a way to just try and sell something for, at a, you know, put a lot of water on it at the end and sell it for $2,500 a ton.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm very involved in all the levels of what goes out, when we get, when we pick, when we don't, what we, so I, and I, yeah, you have to be. If you don't, you're just, you're kind of just taking a shot.
Yeah. Mac, you were saying, I'm sorry.
Yeah, the Gary's and Rovello's vineyards, you know, they don't want you to kill their vines, but, you know, it's unique because you pay by the acres. So if you have an acre, you know, worth of, in that vineyard, then you can say, you know what, I want to, you know, 1.5 ton. You know, they're dropping for you. You're going to pay the same amount of money anyway. So that's your call.
Right, right. So, Mac, tell us a little bit about the program at Vision Cellars. I mean, is there a particular emphasis in style or, you know, varietals? What are you guys looking to do?
We kind of, at Vision Cellars, we kind of look, maybe a little bit, you may say, across the board, but we basically are a Pinot Noir house. However, we make a red wine blend every year. It is never the same. It may be a Zin, it may be a combination of Bordeaux blends and maybe a Merlot. So every year we make a different red wine, and it goes to some of our California restaurants, which is, you know, not doing too much now, but in the past, you know, they would get 5 cases of that red wine blend. And we never put it on the website. We never had to, and I don't think we will this year as well. We also make a rosé, a Pinot Noir rosé, and a white wine blend, which is Sauvignon Blanc and Pinot Gris. The reason we made that wine was because I love Pinot Gris out of Oregon. And my wife loved Sauvignon Blanc. And she says, well, why don't you put that together? And I said, you got to be a fool to put those two grapes together. Nobody do that. Well, I started it about 12 years ago, and we can't keep it in. It's, you know, we don't make a lot of it, and I don't want to make a lot of it, but it's, you know, that's one of the white wines we have. So we try to be across the board. As far as the Pinot Noirs, we go from candy apple, Santa Barbara, kind of a red, nice, you know, red cherry, kind of a sweet wine, to a real heavy Los Alturas, being from down in Monterey County, that can handle any big chunk of meat or any big heavy pasta, or you can also sip it as well. As most folks know, Vision Cellars, we are not the one who want to over oak leave Pinot Noir on oak for a longer period of time. Mm. We never, ever use over 20% new wood. The rest of our wood is maybe 2, 3, or 4 years old, and that all depends on what the juice tastes like when we get ready to put it in the barrel. So that's our program. And I tell everybody all the time, if you don't like Vision Cellars Pinot Noir, that don't mean you don't like Pinot Noir. You just don't like my style. But so far, so good.
Sure. Well, you're speaking my language when it comes to Pinot Noir, Mac, because that's, people tend to run that grape over very often. It sounds like that's not what you guys, you're trying to show the grape, right? And
right.
Mm-hmm. I'm intrigued. Let me ask you this, Mac, because I'm intrigued by the white blend with the Grigio and the Sauv Blanc. So do you do, and listeners who listen to the show, and I'll tell you guys this off the air about my connection to Sauvignon Blanc. I'm a big fan of the grape and done some work with the varietal in years past. Do you tend to kind of go more Grigio and a little less Sauvignon Blanc? Typically, is it like a 60-40 kind of thing, or?
No, it's every year is completely different. Okay. And I only found, you know, couple of vineyards that I can actually make this blend out of, because some years the Pinot Gris can be a little bit stronger, and I don't want to hide the Sauvignon Blanc, but I don't want the Sauvignon Blanc to override it. So it varies anywhere from 35% Pinot Gris to 12%. I don't have a formula to do anything. Like okay. I said, I didn't grow up in the wine business, so I have no formula to go. I want to do what tastes the best, and that what tastes the best for me, because I can't go out there thinking about what, you know, Brian's going to think about this or what Phil's going to think about it. I have to say, this is what I think about it, and then I have to sell that. So my blend on these on the white wine blend is just my taste buds, whether I use 12%, 10%, 15%, 20%, or 30%. I've never gone over 35%. And that way I can taste both of the grapes that way.
That makes sense. So I get what you're going for. Because I was thinking you would do more Gris and less Sauvignon Blanc because that Sauvignon Blanc acid might run the Gris over. But you're using right. the Gris because it'll have that kind of mushroom, that kind of earthy flavor. And I'm thinking maybe adds to the mid palate of the wine quite a bit and brings kind of some roundness to it.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, when I send you something, you'll taste it. You'll see what I mean.
Yeah, I'd love to. That sounds really interesting. Wow. And Phil, let me ask you the same question with longevity. What, just give us, you know, kind of, I know it's a broad question with what you do, because I'm familiar with your program to a degree, but what are you guys kind of going after?
So in our Livermore facility, you know, as a winemaking style, I really have always tried to achieve balance, and it doesn't matter what the varietal is or the blend is. It's always about balance. Like just Max said, he's trying to balance the Grigio and the Blanc to make sure one doesn't mask the other. It's the same thing, whether it's Chardonnay and it's oak and fruit, or it's a blend that everybody brings something to the table and they all work together. One doesn't dominate. So that's pretty much our style. You know, in Livermore, we produce the reserve black label wines everywhere from Pinot Grigio, Pinot Blanc, which I think since the last time we talked got 90 points on Wine Enthusiast Magazine.
Congratulations.
To Cabernet, Grenache, they're all on the website. In our national program right now, we've got Cabernet and Chardonnay, which won 88 points and 87 points, and they're distributed nationally in pretty much in every state right now.
That's great. Awesome. You guys, let's close it here. Mac, will you do me a favor and tell people one more time where they can find Vision Cellars online and such?
You can go to visioncellars.com. Just keep in mind that some of our wines never get onto the website. We don't have that much of some of them. So, you know, we have this, you know, big wine club that was hard for us to keep up with. So, you know, just can look at that. Or if you just don't feel like doing that, you can always call and talk to Miss Lil. That's 707-836-4282. I'm not allowed to be on that side of the house. I can make wine and I can talk about it, but it's run by Miss Lil.
That's great. And I'll make sure all that's in the show notes. So what you're saying, Mac, is if I order some wine from the wine club, you're not going to pull a Phil on me and just not send me the five cases?
No, I'm not going to do that.
Okay, cool. All right.
Wow.
That was hanging. That was a hanging curve. It was sitting out there, Phil. You know I'm going to hit that.
I thought maybe he didn't do it for a while because he maybe thought my credit card would bounce on me. I'm not sure why I didn't get my wine.
And I don't even talk to him about his credit card. I just got to send him some wine.
Sorry, rough crowd. Sorry, Phil. Phil, one more time, Longevity Wines, and tell us about the website for the association too, please.
Okay, so for Longevity Wines, for our Livermore Appellated Wines, you can go to longevitywines.com. Or you can come to the taste room. We're open for curbside pickup now on Saturdays. For the nationally distributed wines, we do have a wine locator on our website, or you can go to wine.com and have them shipped directly to you.
Great. And yeah, you guys are being,
and the I'm sorry, AAAV is aaavintners.org.
Awesome. Be sure to check that out. Thanks, you guys. I really appreciate you being here, and I appreciate your time and the conversation today.
Thank you, man. Right, thank Thanks you. For having us, Brian. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks. Friends, we're going to take a brief musical interlude, and I'll be right back. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening into the Noel Drink Show, friends. Happy to have you here this week. Happy to have you back after we took quite a bit of a break for the summer, as I mentioned at the top of the show, and I also mentioned there at the top of the show. I will let you know a little bit about what's coming up on the program as we move forward next week. Very excited. We're going to have our annual Tales of the Cocktail preview, where we chat with the president of the Tales of the Cocktail Foundation, Caroline Rosen. And after that, we have another great show coming up for you. We're going to be talking with a vodka producer out of Eugene, Oregon, who supports a very fine organization, the Best Friends Animal Society, which is a nonprofit that backs animal welfare, trying to reduce or eliminate euthanization in animal shelters. And the brand is a big supporter. It's a really interesting story how they're all tied together. And we're going to talk a lot about animal welfare and what Best Friends is up to. So that will be in a couple weeks. Stay tuned for that. I do hope you enjoyed the conversation that we had with Mac and Phil. I think another very important conversation here on the NOLA Drink Show. I encourage you to check out Vision Cellars, Max Winery, and Longevity Wines, Phil's Winery, and check out the Association of African American Vintners. Of course, go out and support, go out and celebrate, go out and help elevate Black-owned businesses, not just wineries, of course, anywhere that you can be supportive. Here we are once again, friends, and I was going to talk more about what we were doing, going to be doing on the show moving forward, but yet again, another person of color, another Black man, unnecessarily shot by the police. And we will say his name here, of course, Jacob Blake, father of three. As we all know, this took place in front of his children. This is totally unacceptable. And of course, all this is also happening against the backdrop of the administration and their Republican National Convention and the leadership of the Republican National Convention. What they're doing is they're preying on hate, they are preying on fear, and they are preying on divisiveness. This isn't leadership. This isn't making policy. This is fear-mongering, and this is hate-mongering. Hold your leaders accountable. Local leaders need to be held accountable. Those that support the Republican platform, there is no platform. I guess it's support Trump, right? Whatever. But hold your local leaders accountable. These are the folks that are responsible for policing and administrating policing. Hold your state-level people accountable. Hold your national-level people accountable. This is their job. They're supposed to represent all of us, not just some of us, and they are certainly not supposed to be seeking to divide us and create hate and fear in order to achieve their own self-interest and their own political agenda, not that of this country or not that of this world. Now, as I'm taping this today, today is Jackie Robinson Day in Major League Baseball. Normally happens in April, but because of the pandemic, they are holding it in August. Certainly very important that they moved it. It needs to happen every single year. Jackie Robinson Day in April marks the day that Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier, joining the Brooklyn Dodgers as the first Black man to play in Major League Baseball. Also always on this day, and when we mention this, want to mention Larry Doby. Larry Doby was the first Black man to break the color barrier in the American League. Of course, the Dodgers were in the National League. Just some 11 weeks later, Larry Doby followed in Jackie Robinson's footsteps. Another very important person. Both of these men are truly American heroes. I want to make sure that I say all of the Black athletes and their teammates supporting them across almost all sports in this country, showing unity and in many instances, boycotting playing games. I applaud you. I applaud them. This is important stuff to do, friends. People will say, well, sports are my escape. But okay, I get it. And it's entertainment. Fair enough. But this is the real world. This is important. And these people are using their platform in a justifiable, righteous way to bring awareness. And I want people to understand that. I was watching a fantastic interview with Tucker Cole, very fine young man from a biracial family, plays for the Pittsburgh Pirates, an outfielder for the Pittsburgh Pirates today. And he pointed out, he's talking about baseball, of course, but this applies to all sports. They didn't play their game yesterday. They're not doing this to protest baseball. They're doing this to step out of the spotlight, to bring awareness to things that are more important and bigger in this world than sports. As the relief pitcher Sean Doolittle said from the Washington Nationals, he's talking about COVID, but I think it relates here. He said in recent days, you know, sports are the reward for a functioning society. So sometimes maybe we need to pull back from having these games and the reward of the escape, if you will, to actually think about what's important. So we're living in a just society where people are safe, people experience liberty, people experience freedom. It's a time to reflect and a time to think. And as we come into Jackie Robinson Day, it's yet another example of how we need to think about these things. And I just simply wanted to, before I close out our parting shot here, share a couple quotes with you from Jackie Robinson. The most luxurious possession, the richest treasure anybody has, is his personal dignity. Also, I'm not concerned with your liking or disliking me. All I ask is that you respect me as a human being. Another quote, there's not an American in this country free until every one of us is free. And lastly, I'll say this, one of his great quotes, life is not a spectator sport. If you're going to spend your whole life in the grandstand just watching what goes on, in my opinion, you're wasting your life. We all need to do something and not be spectators here now. Friends, that's our parting shot. Here's to you. I'll be saying, all these sinners will try.